So I land in London about 30 minutes before my flight's supposed to take off to Athens. And normally, you know, this would be a stressful situation, but it's compounded by the fact that I have the tickets for me and my parents to fly from Athens to Santorini. And their phones aren't working, which means that I can't send them their tickets. So basically, if I miss this flight, then they're going to be stuck in the Athens airport by themselves without a hotel room for about 12 hours. So I'm sprinting through the airport. I don't even have to change terminals in Heathrow, and there's still 3 security checkpoints. I'm like, what possibly could I have gotten myself into where I need to be checked by security 3 times from getting off my plane to boarding my next flight in the same terminal? I'm dodging, I'm weaving through security tape, I'm cutting lines. Literally everyone is telling me that I'm not going to make this flight. But I grab my 40-liter backpack and I'm sprinting through this terminal. And I'm like, if I do not make this flight, this is going to be the worst start to a family vacation ever. And welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here again today. You know, before I get started in today's podcast, have any of y'all ever had to send off your passport to get renewed? I just did that the other day and it was so terrifying. I don't know if it's more nerve-wracking knowing that you're mailing off your passport and you're not sure when or if you'll ever get it back, or, you know, someone might just randomly come up to you with an all-expenses-paid trip to, like, Africa next week, and you're like, well, I wish I could go, but I don't have a passport. So I had to do that, and as soon as I gave it to the mail lady, because I had to go to the post office to do it, as soon as I left the post office, I was just like, I should go back in there and get my passport. Like, I have plenty of validity left on it. Like, I don't need to do it right now. But ultimately, I just drove home and figured, well, you know, other people have done it, so it has to work. I think what scared me the most was, you know, the past, like, the U.S. Postal Service are the people who normally handle passports and deal with all that kind of stuff. And so I had done all the passport renewals, like, information and paperwork by myself, and I really just wanted someone to look over it one more time to double check. And so I go in there and ask, like, hey, here's all my information, can you just double check to make sure it looks good? And she's like, yeah, I don't know how to do that, you have to go to the other post office, which is like 20 minutes away. And I already been driving around doing errands like all afternoon, and I just was like, you know what, we're just gonna trust it and go for it. So yeah, hopefully I get my passport back. They're supposed to, have it done within like 10 to 12 weeks. Summer break for me doesn't start for 14 weeks. And so, you know, I gave them 2-week buffer window there. So hopefully, you know, I get it back in time. Or else I guess I'll just be doing more domestic trips. The reason I did it now was, my, passport doesn't expire until January. But you know how most countries have that like 6-month window where you have to have 6 months validity on your passport in order to travel there, which I really don't understand. I looked it up and apparently it's because they don't want your passport to expire while you're in their country. But I'm like, most places it's like 90 days for a like free visa, or like, you know, a couple weeks. I've never seen a six. I guess you can get year long visas, but wouldn't they check your passport then? Like, I don't know. It seems kind of ridiculous. And kind of annoying that, you know, just if my passport expires in 10 years, you know, let me travel for 10 years. But whatever, you got to do what you got to do. So it was going to, that 6-month window was going to fall over summer break. And so I just decided to go ahead and do it now. I was going to travel international over spring break here in a few weeks, actually next week. But I just was not getting enough information regarding the trips I was planning on taking. I wasn't getting enough confirmation on vaccines and PCR tests and what kind of tests I needed to enter the country and things like that. So I just decided, you know what, maybe by summertime it'll be a little bit clearer on what I need to do. And so, you know, I just went ahead and planned a domestic trip. So I'm excited for that. But yeah, I decided, you know, I'm going to have like a 14 weeks before summer break. So go ahead and get that turned in now, so I don't have to worry about it later on. So I'll keep you updated. Hopefully I'll get my passport back before summer break. Today, I'm going to talk about my trip to Greece. And I took this trip November of 2019. So this was my last trip that I took before the pandemic started. Hadn't even heard about COVID or anything like that. Planned this trip. It was awesome. It was actually one of the trips, the first trip that I've taken, not solo, since I've started retraveling again by myself. And I actually went to Greece with my parents. It was really fun. Had a good time with them. And we went over Thanksgiving break. So we spent Thanksgiving together in Greece. So that was really cool. And so the, you know, leading up to the trip by itself was quite an adventure. They live in Arizona, so I've left via DFW. And obviously, you know, I booked this flight all on my own. And so I had to like piece a bunch of different flights together, probably to save myself like $5 or something stupid like that. And so I actually flew from Dallas to Kentucky, Kentucky to New York, New York to London, then London to Athens. And I was meeting up with my parents in London. We actually had coincidentally booked the same flight from London to Athens. And so they were going to be on the same plane with me there. So from, you know, Dallas to Kentucky, no big deal. On time, everything was great. Kentucky to New York, same deal. We were leaving JFK, you know, on time and everything. And then we ended up sitting on the tarmac for an hour there. And so fortunately, the airline pilot made up about half that time on the way to London. And so I only ended up landing in London about 30 minutes behind schedule. And so I had to race through the airport to get to my gate to fly to Athens. And for some reason, London Heathrow, there's so many security checkpoints. I mean, I didn't even have to leave the terminal, and there were still like three different places where I had to go through security. I had to like open up my baggage, you know, take off your shoes, go through the scanners and things like that. It was pretty crazy. And you know, I didn't have that much of a layover time. I think I had like an hour and a half. And so since I was already half an hour late, that put me at like an hour, which normally still, if you're sitting in the same terminal, that wouldn't be a big deal. But there was so much security, it was pretty ridiculous. So luckily, there were a lot of nice people there, and I was able to cut a few lines and get in front of a few large groups in order to make my flight. And so I'm sprinting down the terminal towards my gate, and I just see my dad standing there at the end. With a line of people waiting to board this flight, I'm like, phew, like he's still here, so it's not that big of a deal. Like I've made it. And what was so sketchy about this in general is because we were flying straight from Athens to Santorini, and I was the one who bought the tickets for Santorini. So I had all three of our tickets for that flight, and their cell phones weren't working. And so I couldn't like send them the tickets or anything like that. So if I had missed that flight, then they would have been stuck in Athens. I would have been stuck in London until the next day, and it would have just been a bad start to this trip. But luckily, I made it there. We took our flight to Athens, and then we got on our flight together to Santorini. Now, I'm going to start there. You know, there are a ton of different islands that you can visit there in the Mediterranean in Greece. I would say the most popular are going to be Santorini and probably like Mykonos or something like that. Also, there's Crete, and then Cyprus is not part of Greece. It's its own country, but it's there as well in the same little area. And so, yeah, I definitely recommend visiting one of the islands there. They're absolutely incredible, amazing views. One thing I will recommend is, you know, we went in November and it was amazing. I mean, every situation has its pros and cons, but I definitely believe that going in November to Greece has way more pros than it does cons. You know, I've seen tons of pictures during summer and high peak season for the Greek islands, where like Santorini is so packed, you can barely walk up and down the roads. The alleyways are just miserable looking. And, you know, it might be a fun destination, like the beaches would be great and things like that. But I just don't enjoy being with that many people when I'm on a trip like that. So, you know, there are very few people on Santorini in November, which was amazing. The downside to this was it was kind of chilly. I mean, you would not want to go swimming in the ocean, like in the sea there at all. It was very cold. And a lot of the shops and things like that, a lot of the restaurants were closed because there just wasn't as much demand. But, I mean, we stayed two nights on the island, and, you know, we had different places. We ate different places each meal. There were still plenty of options, and, you know, we had the place basically to ourselves. It was amazing, and I highly recommend going in off-season. I honestly feel like I just accidentally hit off-season. I really don't plan for it, and then I get there, and I'm like, oh, sweet, it's off-season. Like, November here in Greece, you know, summer in Asia. Like, it just works out that way. So definitely recommend the islands. Definitely recommend low season. It makes it tremendously more, you know, enjoyable. There are multiple ways to get to the island. Like I mentioned, we flew there. You can take cruise ships to the different islands. You can take just fast boats to the islands. You know, the flight was like maybe $40, $50 round trip from Athens, and it was like a 45-minute flight. I totally think that's worth it. You know, taking a boat to the islands would definitely be a cool experience, but we only had a week, and so time was money, and so, you know, flying was our best option there. Once you're on the island, you know, there's multiple ways you can get around. You can rent a car, you can do things like that, you can take cabs, but there's a great bus system in Santorini, and there's a main terminal there in Fira, and it basically goes anywhere you want to go on the island. It's pretty cheap, and, you know, you just find the schedule, and it's very consistent. We rode it everywhere we wanted to go, and it was easy to figure out, and it was just a great experience. While you're on Santorini, you obviously want to go to Oia. It's like the, you know, iconic Santorini vistas with the white and blue, you know, architecture there. A lot of people say that's like the best sunset spot on the island, but, you know, I feel like anywhere on this island is going to be a great sunset spot. But Oia does have, you know, just that feel to it that you really expect out of Santorini. Although there were some great views in Fira as well of the crater there in the middle of the island and, you know, of the surrounding areas as well. Akrotiri is on, so Santorini is sort of like a crescent shape, and so Oia is on one side of the crescent, one tip, and then Akrotiri is on the other tip of the crescent. And Akrotiri is really cool as well. There's an ancient Akrotiri archaeological site there. Unfortunately, it was closed the day that we went to Akrotiri, but it looks really interesting, and the museum there in Athens has an entire section for the Akrotiri site there, so that's pretty awesome. The Red Beach is in Akrotiri. It's a pretty interesting hike down. There's a whole bunch of caution signs and things telling you not to do the hike because of rockfall and things like that. You have to be careful for and watch out. But going down to Red Beach is awesome. You have like the red cliff face there, and then the red volcanic rock going into the greenish blue Mediterranean water there. The colors are just awesome. Definitely recommend at least going to the Red Beach. You don't have to climb down to it. There's a great vantage point from up top if you're worried about the hike down. But definitely recommend checking out the Red Beach. There's also a lighthouse around Akrotiri. I had originally planned on going there, but then it ended up being like a 3-mile hike to the lighthouse from the Red Beach, and I didn't feel like catching another bus and then just having it drop us off like a mile down the road to do some more hiking. So ultimately, I scratched that off the list, but there's a pretty cool lighthouse you might want to check out if that's your thing. Three Bells Church in Fira is really awesome. It was actually like right next door to my hotel. I did not realize it until I wanted to look at it during sunrise, and I started like Google mapping where it's at, and it's like at my hotel, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, why is it telling me that I'm at Three Bells Church? But I ended up just going outside and turning the corner, and there it was, and it was a beautiful view. And so there are a ton of awesome churches and random sites throughout Fira. And so before you leave, I definitely recommend, you know, just walking a portion of the island. One morning, that morning I went out to go see the sunrise at Three Bells Church. I ended up, you know, just taking a walk. I think I was probably just wandering around Fira for, you know, an hour and a half, a little after sunrise, and especially since it was down season, I could just kind of walk through the different sort of hotel balconies and courtyards and things like that. No big deal. There were beautiful pools and great scenery, and it was just an awesome experience. So, you know, I always recommend walking a city, and Fira is no exception. I mean, it's not a big city, and there are just great views. There's amazing architecture and just colors, vibrant colors, you know, everywhere you look. So definitely recommend and just take a long walk around the city, around the island. You won't regret it. So that's about all we did in Santorini. Like I said, we got there late one night, that first night, and then we spent all day the second day, and then we left the next day in the afternoon. So about 1.5, almost 2 full days there in Santorini. And, you know, you could have definitely spent longer there, but, you know, the beaches, you didn't really want to go swim at the beaches or anything like that because it was so cold. And so, you know, 2 full days there was plenty enough time to enjoy the island. So after that, we hopped on a plane, flew back to Athens. And, oh man, there's so much to do in Athens. I'm not even going to pretend like this scratches the surface. We did so much in Athens, and there has to be so much more that we did not do. So I'm just going to kind of hit what we did and let me know, you know, the amazing stuff that we missed out on. So there's the Temple of Zeus, which is incredible. There are multiple pillars still standing for the Temple of Zeus, and they're huge. I mean, they are so tall. It's just, you can't obviously go into the actual temple portion, but you can stand really close, like right next to the pillars, and they're just ginormous, and they make you feel so tiny to stand there next to them. The, you know, sculpting on the pillars are, you know, amazing as well. So definitely check that out. Right next to the Temple of Zeus is Hadrian's Arch, and, you know, it's just another cool ancient site there in the city. I mean, there are ancient sites everywhere. I remember we were walking to dinner one night, and we just come across this gated-in area where there's, like, an ancient library or agora was there, and there's just these, you know, first, second century pillars just standing there, no big deal, just in the middle of, like, a strip mall. And it's incredible that I just love visiting places where there's literally ancient history around every corner. It's ridiculous. So Hadrian's Arch is right there next to the Temple of Zeus. It, you know, commemorates, Hadrian's first visit to Athens or creating Athens. I think there's some controversy of what exactly the arch is for. But you know, it commemorates Hadrian in some way or another. Obviously, the Acropolis, I mean, that is Greece. When I think of Greece, I think of the Parthenon, and I think of the Acropolis. On top of the Acropolis, obviously, the Parthenon is there, the Erechtheion is there, there's the Temple to Nike, and there's one other temple, I'm not sure who it's for, but there's 4 temples up there that are pretty awesome. There's 2 gates for the Acropolis. There's the main gate, and then there's the south gate. And so both gates kind of give you 2 different options. The south gate is less popular, but it goes through like the ruins of the area around the Acropolis, and it goes next to the theater there, Dionysus Theater, and then it kind of winds around to the actual Acropolis, whereas the main gate takes you straight up a bunch of stairs to the Acropolis. So I got there about 30 minutes before they opened, because I obviously wanted to be the first one on top of the Acropolis, and so I went to the main gate because that was the most direct path. Even though the south gate, you know, would be more empty, the main gate was going to get you to the top of the Acropolis first. And so it was really interesting because I believe they opened at like 8 o'clock, 7:30, whichever it was, about 5 minutes before the gates opened, the military arrived, and they did a few drills over there on the side, and then they had the Greek flag, and they started marching it up the stairs to the top of the Acropolis. And so, you know, after 5 minutes, they let, you know, the visitors in, and so, you know, I make a beeline to climb up to the top of the Acropolis, and about halfway up, I get stuck behind about 20 military guys marching or doing a march up to the top of the Acropolis. And so obviously I'm not going to like be, hey, excuse me, pardon me, can I get through and like squeeze through and, you know, run up to the top of the Acropolis. So I kind of just had to wait and slowly climb up behind them. But that was really interesting and unique. I'd, you know, not heard about this at all. But it was really a unique experience to watch the Greek military carry up the national flag to the top. Once we reached the top, you know, they went ahead and took off to this huge flagpole at the back edge of the Acropolis. And so then I was able to get some awesome photos just by myself up there with the Parthenon and things like that. And so they went ahead, the military went ahead and put the flag up on the flagpole, and you can see this flag all over the city. I mean, the Acropolis obviously sticks out like a sore thumb, and the flagpole, you know, just adds to it and is just up there waving in the middle of the city, and you can literally see it from anywhere, in the city. So they like played the national anthem, while they were, you know, raising the flag, and it was just a really cool experience. You know, about maybe 5 minutes later, then a whole bunch of other tourists showed up, and that moment was gone. But for something that I wasn't expecting, it was pretty cool to witness. So that was pretty awesome. So yeah, I definitely recommend getting there early. For some reason, I was expecting there to be more stuff to do on top of the Acropolis. I mean, it was honestly just the temples and that was it. There are some amazing views. I mean, you can literally see the entire city from up there. So you can see like the Temple of Zeus. It looks tiny from the top of the Acropolis. You can see all the way to the Panathenaic Stadium. You know, it's just a great viewpoint of the city. And so, yeah, I think I probably spent maybe 2 hours on top of the Acropolis just wandering around, getting different vantage points of the different temples and things like that. You can't go inside the Parthenon. They're doing like conservatory work and things like that, conservation stuff. I doubt, you know, if they weren't doing conservation stuff that you could go in there anyways. But you can really just get close to the outside and that's about it. But still really awesome. It's, you know, an iconic site. And so you have to go to the Acropolis. So like I mentioned earlier, the Panathenaic Stadium is there in Athens. It is the only stadium in the world made completely out of marble. It was actually built in about 330 BC, but it was made out of like limestone and stuff then. But then around 140 AD, then they built it out of marble. And so it was used for races, things like that. It was the home of the Olympics, the first modern Olympics that they had. I think that was like in the early 1900s that they had the first modern Olympics. I'm not sure. And then, of course, the 2004 Athens Olympics, they used it again. And also, the Olympic torch is passed around to different places, to a lot of different places in Greece, and then it's sent to the hosting country. And the Panathenaic Stadium is the last stop for the Olympic torch before it's sent to the host country of the Olympics for that year. So pretty interesting. Right outside the Acropolis, the Panathenaic Stadium is not next to the Acropolis. It's kind of, you know, a mile or two away. So going back to the Acropolis, right outside is the Areopagus Hill or Mars Hill. And this is a really awesome site. Mars Hill shows up in the Bible. Paul spoke there to some of the philosophers. So that was really cool, you know, tie in there. And so Areopagus Hill is the place where, you know, all the smart people, all the philosophers would go and talk about philosophy. They would go and talk about, the city and different things that were happening. And they were just like the leaders of the time would just go there and hang out and talk and discuss stuff. And so this has been a meeting place for thousands of years. So you can actually climb to the top of the hill. It gives you great views of the Parthenon and the Acropolis. We went up there for sunset. It was awesome. But the entire top of this mountain is smooth. I mean, it might as well be made out of glass. And this is simply because after thousands of years, so many people have walked across it, sat on it, laid down on this rock that it's just completely worn away any sharp surfaces of this rock. You know, you see like a ton of erosion and stuff like that from weather, but it's not as often that you see, you know, human weathering and erosion like this. You know, sometimes you'll see, even like at the Acropolis, I mean, just thousands of years of people climbing up the steps. They are kind of worn away there in the middle portion. But I had never experienced anything like this where an entire hill was just completely slick because of the amount of people who have, you know, walked across it and sat on it and things like that. So that was really interesting and really cool just to see that and experience that. And it just really, you know, goes to prove the history of how important that site is historically. So there's a couple other places. The ancient Agora is next to the Acropolis. It looks really cool. There's a temple there that's like completely restored, and it looks pretty awesome. We unfortunately did not go into the ancient Agora. There are three entrances to the Agora, and for some reason when we were there, two of them were closed. And so we walked around for like an hour, and each time we found an entrance, it was one of the ones that was closed. And we had been, you know, up since like, you know, 6:30 or whenever to go to the Acropolis, and we were pretty tired. And so I was like, I can see everything I need to see from outside this fence. So we could see like the temple and basically the entire area. But we just called it a day and did not bother actually going into the Agora there. But it looks pretty awesome. If you can find an entrance, I'm sure it'd be totally worth checking out and going into. Also, Aristotle's Lyceum. A Lyceum is basically like a gymnasium, a school, and it's where Aristotle had his school. So basically, this is where he would teach philosophy and things like that. And the cool part about this is not only was Aristotle there, but Plato and Socrates also visited this Lyceum multiple times throughout history. So it was cool just to be at a site where these three amazing philosophers had at one time been. I will admit that this was probably the place I was most disappointed, simply because there was not a lot there. It's not a huge site to begin with, but then all the archaeology and all the dig and stuff like that was really at ground level. There were no pillars, there were no walls that had been rebuilt. So really, I mean, you could kind of see some outlines of rooms and things like that, but there was just not a lot to see or do there. We probably spent like 20 minutes at the Lyceum, and I was ready to go. And so honestly, there's a pretty, you know, transparent fence. It's just like wrought iron all the way around the Lyceum. So unless you just really want to go into a site where these great philosophers had also been, I would really just recommend checking it out from the street. You're not gonna miss much. There's like maybe two signs that you can read that have history about the site on them inside. I mean, it's not that expensive. It's maybe like a couple dollars, but if you're on a shoestring budget, this is definitely the place just to look through the gate and call it a day. There's a few museums there in Athens that I definitely would recommend checking out. The Acropolis Museum is awesome. This is honestly one of my favorite museums. You know, it's right across the street from the Acropolis. The side facing the Acropolis is totally like glass, and so there's great views of the Acropolis, and it's really cool. It's just all the artifacts that they took off the Acropolis. So you're standing there looking at some of the original friezes and things like that, and you can just look straight across to the Acropolis. So it's really cool just to like, oh, here's this amazing marble statue, and then I turn to my right, and oh, that's where they found it. That's pretty cool, just associating things like that. It's not like, oh, here's the statue that they found, you know, 500 miles south of here. And it's like, oh, here's the item. That's where they found it. So it's really cool. It's a more modern museum. I think they built it within the past few years. And so, you know, all of the setup is really cool. It's just displayed really well. It's a good size. It's not very large. I think you could probably walk through it in an hour or two. It's really bright and lit up in there. It's just a great museum overall. Definitely recommend checking it out. There's also the National Archaeology Museum, which is like the museum of Greece there. So, I mean, this is a lot larger of a museum, and it encompasses the entire history of Greece. So there's a ton of, you know, ancient artifacts from like the Akrotiri from Santorini. There's like, you know, BC artifacts there, from, past civilizations before the Greeks even showed up. So it was pretty cool. The one thing that really stood out to me for this museum in particular was how much gold there was in this museum. There was a ton of like gold bracelets, gold sculptures, just a ton of gold artifacts where, I've been to like the Egyptian Museum where there's a ton of gold there as well. But this place was just like tons of different styles of gold artifacts and things like that. So it was really cool, very interesting. And I definitely recommend checking out this museum as well. One thing that I really appreciated about this museum as well is I didn't realize that Greeks were famous for bronze sculptures and statues as well. And so it was just a nice break from all the marble statues and things like that that I had been looking at for the past few days. I've talked about this before, but once you're in a location for an extended amount of time, you kind of get numb to what you're seeing. And so the same kind of goes for, Athens. You're seeing a ton of beautiful marble statues, which still amaze me to this day how someone can make something so lifelike out of a piece of rock. But nonetheless, you see, your 50,000th statue of the day, and you're kind of just like, oh, there's another statue. There's another statue. But then you throw in a bronze statue, and you're like, wow, there's something new and fresh and cool. So that was really awesome. I enjoyed that. Just kind of breaking up sort of the monotony, as bad as that sounds, of the marble statues. So I really appreciated that. Now, there's a ton of awesome day trips that you can take from Athens. The one that we took was to Corinth. And, we actually took a private driver from Athens to Corinth. And, after driving in Turkey and a couple other places, I kind of feel like now I would be more prepared to drive in Greece. I've watched vlogs where people, rent cars and it's no big deal. At the time, I wasn't really sure, about the legality of having an international driving permit. Some places you need it, some places you don't. It kind of just depends on your home driver's license. But I really wasn't up for figuring that out at the time. So today, I probably would rent a car, and I think that would be a good option, probably a little bit cheaper. But, I really appreciated, having this private driver for this trip. He was not a tour guide, so he didn't like take us into the sites, but he was very knowledgeable about the region and things like that. And so he was able to answer any questions that me or my parents might have had. He was able to point random things out along the way. And so it was really awesome. And I enjoyed, just kind of being able to sit back and relax and not, have to be in planning mode and anything like that. It's kind of stressful planning a trip for other people. There are multiple different reasons why I feel like solo travel is awesome. But having to plan a trip for other people, like, it's a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed being on a trip with other people. But I just always felt like it's almost like having a party at your house. Like, you're the host and you have to make sure everyone's having a good time. And so it was sort of the same deal on this trip. Like, I always wanted to make sure that my parents were enjoying their trip and were seeing what they wanted to see, while at the same time making sure that I was seeing what I wanted to see. So it was sort of that being the first trip like that, it was kind of stressful, like having to make sure that everyone was having a good time. Everything was working out. The first night, I'm kind of getting off the beaten track here, but the first night, it was off season, but all of the times that I had seen online had different closing times for off season than what were actually posted at the sites. So I arrive in Athens thinking, okay, we're going to have an hour before all these sites close. And so I, hustle out of the hotel and we're like going to, we stopped by the Temple of Zeus and it was closed. And I was like, everything I read online said this was supposed to be open for another hour, but now this sign says it's closed. And so literally the first night in Athens, all my plans had to be kind of changed. Because everything, all of my recon that I had, figured out online prior was, shot. And so I was just like, well, what are we going to do now? And I was kind of freaking out. And my parents were like, oh, it's okay. Like, let's just, it's fine. And so, we kind of just walked around and did some other stuff. But yeah, it was kind of stressful because normally I just kind of roll with it. But knowing that, hey, like, I have to make sure that they're having a great time too. I was like, oh no, like, what am I going to do? But it worked out fine. We ended up seeing everything that we wanted to see. But yeah, sometimes that happens, but it was nice going to Corinth and kind of just sitting back, relaxing and letting this guy drive us around. So we went to Corinth. If you go to Corinth, you're going to stop at the Corinth Canal. It's a pretty big tourist attraction. It's, I think, like 4 miles long. They dug it through, obviously, a little isthmus there. And they actually, they started it in like the first century AD, and then they gave up. I guess it was too hard or something, which, I mean, think about using the shovel to dig 4 miles worth of a canal. That's pretty intimidating. And so actually in the first century, once they gave up digging the canal, then they just decided, well, let's just drag the boats across the land. And so there's actually a paved road that you can still see parts of today where they would actually drag the boats overland to save time through that isthmus. So that's almost more impressive than the actual dugout canal that they dragged boats across this isthmus. But they ended up finishing it towards the end of the 1800s. But by the time they finished it, the boats that were being used were too big to fit into the canal. And so it was never really used to its full potential. But it's a great sight. It's a great stop. You can see from one side of the sea all the way through it to the other. It's pretty interesting. And it's a cool stop. Now, in ancient Corinth, there's obviously the ancient Corinth site there. There's a great museum. They have a ton of artifacts from that area. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of mosaics, which are always fascinating to me. More marble statues to check out. Ancient Corinth is pretty awesome. The Temple of Apollo is there. And this temple was really different from any of the other temples that I had seen. Or really have seen since. It was more of like short and squatty. I think of like the Temple of Zeus, and those pillars were just like, you know, magnificently tall and shapely. But then the Temple of Apollo, they're probably like maybe 20 foot, 15 foot tall pillars there, and they're just like really fat. I'd never seen anything like that before, so it was pretty funny. But just, you know, appreciating the different architecture was really cool. Just something to switch it up was really neat and interesting. Paul had also been to ancient Corinth. He had, you know, spoke multiple times there, written letters to the Corinthians. So that was really interesting to be at that site as well, and just to be there where he was and visit that site. Up on the hill above ancient Corinth is Acrocorinth. It's sort of like the Acropolis of Corinth. There's sort of like a castle there. It's pretty interesting. We were running out of time with our driver, and so we really didn't spend a ton of time there. But what we did see was pretty awesome. There were some great views from up on top. And so if you have some extra time, definitely check out Acrocorinth as well. I definitely recommend, that's all we did pretty much there in Athens. There are some awesome streets just to walk around, explore. Once again, just walk around the city. We did not take a cab too many places. I think we took one to the National Archaeology Museum, and then obviously our private driver. And that was about it. We stayed pretty close to the Acropolis, so we could walk to the Acropolis, the Temple of Zeus, everything like that was pretty close. But definitely recommend walking at least a little bit of the city to explore. But I do recommend taking a day trip. You know, the countryside of Greece is beautiful. And I mean, you could spend weeks in Greece, I'm sure, and explore the northern portions and things like that. But if you're just in Athens for a week or a few days, if you have time to spare, I definitely recommend, you know, getting out, seeing the coastline, just seeing the mountains and seeing the, you know, nature around the area. Don't just stay locked inside the city. There's a ton of history outside of Athens. And, you know, I definitely don't think that you will regret, you know, spending, you know, half a day or a whole day of your trip leaving the city. That wasn't something that I had originally planned, but it was something that my parents were really wanting to do. And at the end of it, I was really glad that we had taken that day trip, not only to see Corinth, but also just to get out of the city and see the countryside of Greece. So definitely recommend doing that. So I actually left Greece a day before my parents, and I flew to Jordan, which I'm going to leave that for another episode because that was pretty crazy in and of itself. But after Jordan, I flew back to Chicago, and to kind of wrap up, just tie some loose ends together with this crazy travel portion of this trip, I flew into Chicago, and I had a 3-hour layover. And, you know, a three-hour layover, I feel like, is a hefty layover. I mean, that should be plenty of time to get from one, you know, terminal to another to catch your flight. So I land there. We land on time. It's awesome. And I'm like, sweet, I'm going to have plenty of time. I might even have time to get dinner. And so I, you know, go through customs and I get outside. And Chicago O'Hare does not have a train system. And I'm like, this is one of the biggest hubs in the United States, and there is not a train system. I hadn't flown through Chicago in years, so I didn't realize that. And so I had to take a bus from the international terminal to the terminal that I was flying out of. And so I'm like, okay, well, whatever. I still have like 2 hours and 45 minutes, no big deal. So there's this line to catch the bus to take you to the next terminal. So I get in the line, and it's probably, you know, 100 yards to the door. It's not like no big deal. About 30 minutes later, I finally make it to the door. I step outside the door, and there is no bus. There is a tent with a zigzagging line that goes on probably, like, for another couple hours underneath this tent. Now, I'm in Chicago. It's the 1st of December. It's freezing. I think it was snowing outside. And I've just stood in line inside for 30 minutes, and now I'm having to stand inside this zigzag maze of a tent line for about another 2 hours. And by the time I get on this bus, I'm like, my plane is boarding in like 20 minutes. So of course, my terminal is the last one on this bus route. So we get off at my terminal. I run to security. You know, there's like two open lines of security, and obviously I choose the longest one. I mean, there's like one person in one line and 10 in the other. So I'm like, oh, I'll pick the line with one person, and like 100 people go through the other line before I finally get up to the security dude. And so I make my way through security. My plane's like already boarding by the time I get through security. I sprint, and it's like at the other end of the terminal, so I'm sprinting. And it's hard to sprint with a backpack on. And this is like a 40-liter backpack, and I'm sprinting through an airport. So I'm running, and I literally get to my gate, and there's no one at the gate except for the flight attendants or the people at the booking counter. And so they're like literally shutting the door, last call. I'm like, I'm here. And so they let me on. I'm literally, everyone sat down. I mean, the babies are asleep on this plane by the time I get on it. And so I finally get on the plane, I sit down, breathe a sigh of relief. I fly straight from Chicago to Dallas, no big deal. And, you know, I make it home. But just from beginning to end, crazy flights along this trip. But it was an awesome trip. Had a great time traveling with my family there. It was a fun experience. Like I said, it was the first time I had traveled not solo in quite a long time. So it was fun to share that experience with them and to have Thanksgiving together there. I've actually traveled international the past 3 Thanksgivings, so I think that's, you know, a trend that I'm going to have to indefinitely keep up. It's a lot of fun. And so, yeah, Greece is an awesome place. Definitely recommend it. There's so much to do there, so much history, but you will find something that you absolutely love there. One last thing I'll say about it is Greek food is incredible. I mean, I've traveled quite a few different places, and I definitely think that Greek food is number one. It's just so good. The flavors are amazing. It's so fresh and clean and crisp. You know, like in Arabic countries, you could just be eating a bowl of plain rice, and there's just going to be a ton of grease and stuff in it. And although it tastes amazing, you just feel like kind of greasy and unhealthy after you eat it. But in Greece, I mean, you can get like gyro, you can get the Greek salads, and you just feel like healthy, and it's great, and it tastes amazing. Literally everything I had there was good. The tzatziki, the pita, everything is awesome. So definitely, definitely check out the food there. Do not be shy. Try everything. Ask the servers what you should get. You know, it's great. You will not... You know, I've said a lot of times that you won't regret eating local food. I've said that about street food in India. And, you know, I probably lied there a little bit. You might regret that a little bit. But Greek food, you will definitely not regret, you know, trying the different Greek food. It's all so good, so amazing. You'll feel great after eating it. And so, yeah, I'm going to end it with that. If you have any comments for me, something I missed, Definitely leave me a comment here. Leave me one on my Instagram at educateyourtravel. While you're there, check out photos. I have saved stories from my Greece trip. And I also have just random posts throughout my feed from Greece. So check those out as well. Don't forget, it's up to you to make your life interesting. So get up, get out, explore the world, take that next adventure. Thank you so much for joining me here again today. And I cannot wait to catch up with you next time.